You know the standard model of particle physics, right? I mean, if you follow this field at all, you know it's arguably the most successful scientific theory in human history.
Oh, absolutely. Gives us quarks, leptons, bosons, the whole catalog of reality.
Right, exactly. But beneath that success, there's this, uncomfortable secret.
The fudge factors.
Yes, the dozen or so arbitrary parameters. We have to literally force the math to match what we observe. Just to explain why a proton weighs what it does.
Yeah, or why certain particles interact the way they do.
Right. But what if the reason we rely on all these fitted parameters isn't because the universe is messy, but because we're, well, looking at it in the wrong number of dimensions?
It is a really profound question. I mean, we are just so accustomed to thinking of the universe as a 3D container.
Like a box where particles bounce around.
Exactly, like objects in a room.
Yeah.
But the source material we are looking at today challenges that fundamental assumption entirely. It argues that to solve the lingering mysteries of quantum mechanics, we have to discard the idea of the atom as the 3D physical object.
And that brings us to the focus of today's deep dive. We are looking at this fascinating independent research paper published by Eric McLean in April 2026.
Titled, "The Atom is E8."
Right. And this isn't just some iterative update to the standard model. It's presenting a potential massive breakthrough, basically a claim that this is the correct way to understand the atom, where everything finally clicks into place.
It takes a whole list of outstanding problems in physics and solves them by proposing that the atom is just pure geometry.
Specifically, an eight-dimensional geometry that relies on the importance of the pentagon and icosahedral symmetry. So, okay, let's unpack this. Because claiming that an atom is eight-dimensional map, this object called E8, it sounds a bit abstract. What exactly is E8?
Well, to really grasp E8, you have to look at how mathematicians classify continuous symmetries.
Okay.
They map these out using structures called Lie algebras, and there is a very specific finite series of exceptional Lie algebras.
All right, it goes G2, F4, E6, E7, and it culminates in E8.
Exactly, it stops there. In math, E8 is considered a terminal object. The axioms of mathematics simply do not permit a larger or more symmetric exceptional root system to exist.
So it's a hard ceiling. I mean, there's no E9 waiting to be discovered once our math gets a bit better.
No, E8 is the ultimate geometric structure. And if the universe is going to construct matter from the deepest, most rigid geometry available, E8 is the foundation.
Wow.
Now, the geometry of E8 is defined by 240 minimal vectors.
240 vectors.
Yeah, and the foundational algebraic proof of the paper revolves around how those vectors behave. They break down perfectly into two identical, distinct sets of 120 vectors.
And those sets form shapes, right?
Yes, each of those sets of 120 forms the vertices of a highly complex four-dimensional shape called a 600 cell.
So this massive eight-dimensional structure naturally splits into two separate four-dimensional structures.
It does. And those four-dimensional 600 cells possess icosahedral symmetry.
Ah, and that is where the pentagon becomes crucial.
Exactly. The geometry of the pentagon and the golden ratio inherent within it actually dictates the shape of these 600 cells.
Okay.
In what the paper terms pentagon physics, one of these 4D 600 cells serves as the spatial framework for protons.
And the other one.
The other 4D 600 cell operates completely independently as the framework for neutrons.
Yeah, wait, I'm struggling here. I had to push back a little.
Go ahead.
You're saying the protons and neutrons don't live inside this geometry, but that they are the geometry.
That is what the paper is arguing, yes.
But how can an atom, which has mass and physical properties we can actually measure, just be empty math? I mean, I'm trying to map this as something physical in my head.
It is definitely a leap.
Is it like a musical instrument? So you have a violin. The wooden body dictates what kind of sound it can make. So are you saying E8 is the wooden body and the particles are just the notes being played on it?
Yes, the math actually backs that up beautifully. E8 is essentially the ultimate resonant cavity.
Oh, so the two 600 cells are its acoustic chambers.
Exactly right. A particle is not a physical ball dropped into that cavity. The particle is the standing wave vibrating across that specific geometry.
So a proton is simply a standing wave.
Yes. And those quarks that the standard model tells us are trapped inside the proton.
Right, the little smaller balls inside the bigger ball.
They aren't smaller physical balls at all. They are the eigenvalues, the naturally permitted harmonic frequencies of that standing wave.
Oh.
Every particle that exists is a vibration perfectly matched to this geometry. Anything that doesn't fit the geometry simply cannot exist.
That fundamentally rewrites how we should visualize matter. But, I mean, if protons and neutrons are just 4D standing waves vibrating in these eight-dimensional acoustic chambers, how does that map to the chaotic 3D measurements physicists have been taking for the last century.
What do you mean?
Well, if you're a listener thinking about the particle accelerators we build, you know, we are measuring things in three dimensions. How does a 4D geometry explain the messy data we've been seeing?
It doesn't just explain the mess. It reveals that the mess is an illusion caused by our limited perspective. Take the proton spin crisis, for example.
Oh, right. Where they measure the spin but can't find most of it.
Exactly. For decades, physicists have measured the angular momentum of a proton, but they can only ever account for about 30% of it coming from the quarks.
And the other 70% is supposedly missing, right?
Yes. They've tried to attribute it to the spin of gluons or orbital momentum, but the math has just never cleanly resolved it.
So where is the missing 70% if we apply this E8 model?
The paper argues it was never missing in the first place.
Really?
Yeah, if a proton is a four-dimensional standing wave, it operates mathematically as a 4D rigid body.
Okay.
In a four-dimensional space, a rigid body has six independent planes of rotation.
Six planes. But our particle detectors are firmly rooted in three-dimensional space.
Precisely. Which means they are physically only capable of interacting with three planes of rotation. We are trying to measure a six-plane rotation using a three-plane instrument.
Oh, wow. So the crisis is merely the mathematical artifact of projecting a 4D angular momentum down into 3D space.
That's exactly it.
I see. It's an issue of projection. It's like, what if I make a shadow puppet?
A shadow puppet.
Yeah, say I take my 3D hand, hold it up to a light, and cast a 2D shadow of a dog on the wall.
Okay, I follow you.
If a 2D scientist living on the wall tries to study my dog shadow, they're going to be completely baffled. Like, the dog's ears might vanish into thin air, or its mouth might move in a way that breaks their 2D laws of physics, simply because my hand is rotating in a dimension they can't access.
Right.
So we are those confused scientists looking at the 3D shadows of these 4D standing waves.
It's a really helpful way to visualize it.
Yeah.
But let's refine that analogy just a bit, because in quantum mechanics, there is no wall, and there is no light source casting the shadow.
Good point.
The 3D projection is the only physical reality our instruments can actually couple with. But you definitely have the right idea. The confusion comes from the missing dimension.
And does that apply to other issues too?
Oh, absolutely. You see the exact same illusion with the proton radius puzzle.
Right. That's the one where measuring the proton with an electron gives a different size than measuring it with a heavier muon.
Yes. For years, physicists have argued over why the proton seems to change size depending on what you hit it with.
That's so weird.
But in E8, the radius is not a fixed 3D boundary. The electron and the muon are simply sampling different 3D cross-sectional slices of the exact same four-dimensional charge distribution.
Oh, so the proton isn't changing. Our angle of slicing into the 4D wave is what's changing.
Exactly.
And what about confinement? The fact that we can never isolate a single quark.
Right, the QCD string theory.
Yeah, in the standard model, they had to invent this concept of an infinitely stretching rubber band to explain why quarks can't be pulled apart.
And that's where the geometric perspective is just so powerful. In E8, trying to isolate a quark is a category error.
Because the quark is an eigenvalue of the standing wave.
Yes. It is a property of the whole system.
Like trying to isolate the note C from the physical string of the violin, you can't put the sound in a jar. It only exists as long as the whole string is vibrating.
What's fascinating here is how this entirely demystifies the stooky aspects of quantum mechanics.
You mean like superposition and entanglement?
Exactly. We've been told for decades that quantum superposition means a particle is hovering in multiple states at once until an observer forces it to choose.
Right, the whole Schrodinger's cat thing.
Yes, but in this 4D framework, superposition isn't a magical state of limbo. It is a solid, definite structural vertex in four dimensions.
But because that fourth coordinate is inaccessible to us, it appears smeared out in 3D.
Precisely. And the same goes for quantum entanglement.
So it's not spooky action at a distance?
No. Two particles aren't communicating instantly across space. They are physically sharing a structure in the fourth coordinate.
Mind-blowing.
The connection is local and immediate in the geometry, even if it looks separated by miles in our 3D slice.
So we've basically been trying to do physics in flatland. Okay, but let's look at the architecture of the atom as a whole.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that the protons are vibrating in one 4D600 cell, and the neutrons are vibrating in a separate 4D600 cell.
That's right.
But, you know, to you and me, an atom is a single cohesive unit. It holds together. So if they are in these separate mathematical chambers, how do they communicate? Like, what binds an atom together?
They interact through a mathematical bridge.
A bridge.
Yes. While the E8 geometry splits into two distinct 600 cells, they are not completely isolated. They are mathematically entangled through a shared 24-dimensional substructure.
Okay, 24 dimensions now.
It's known as a 24 cell, or D4. This D4 bridge is the singular pathway through which the proton chamber and the neutron chamber can actually exchange information.
And in the real world of physics, what does that exchange of information actually look like?
It looks exactly like the strong nuclear force.
Whoa, really?
Yes. The strong force isn't some invisible glue holding marbles together. It is the physical manifestation of interactions crossing this D4 bridge.
That makes so much sense.
And the geometry of that bridge dictates exactly how atoms are built. Within a single 600 cell, every proton state connects to 12 nearest neighbors.
So there are 12 internal pathways.
However, the D4 bridge provides 24 pathways between the proton cell and the neutron cell.
Okay, let me do the math. So you have a 24 to 12 ratio of external to internal connections.
Yes.
That's a 2-to-1 ratio.
Exactly. The geometry inherently favors cross-species bonding protons to neutrons at a 2-to-1 ratio over bonding with its own kind.
Wow.
This is the purely mathematical reason why stable atomic nuclei in the real world prefer to have roughly equal numbers of protons and neutrons. The structure naturally maximizes those 24 bridge connections to lower the overall energy state.
Okay, so the strong force is just the D4 bridge between the two chambers.
Correct.
But what about the electromagnetic force? Where are the electrons in this pure geometry?
The electrons.
Yeah, because if we've completely thrown out the solar system model, the electron can't just be a little moon orbiting the nucleus in a vacuum. Where does it live?
Well, to locate the electron, we have to examine the internal structure of the 600 cells themselves.
Okay.
Within each cell, the math establishes a spectral surface.
A spectral surface?
Yes, a boundary defined by the Galois conjugation of Q root 5.
Whoa, okay, wait. Galois conjugation of Q root 5. You completely lost me there.
Sorry, let me break that down.
Please do, because what does that actually mean in a physical or spatial sense?
Think of it as a mathematical sieve, or like a filter built right into the geometry.
Okay, a filter.
The number 5, and specifically the square root of 5, is fundamentally tied to the golden ratio and pentagonal symmetry.
Right, the pentagon again.
Exactly. This Galois boundary acts as a filter that divides the vibrations into two distinct behaviors: rational eigenvalues and irrational eigenvalues.
Okay.
The rational eigenvalues belong to the confined interior, that is the mass energy, the dense stuff that makes up the proton or the neutron.
And the irrational ones?
The irrational eigenvalues belong to the free exterior sector, where electric charge couples at full strength.
So the math naturally creates an inside and an outside, like a dense core and a charged perimeter.
Yes. And the electron is the standing wave that lives exactly on that mathematical boundary.
Oh, wow.
Because both the proton 600 cell and the neutron 600 cell share the identical eigenvalue spectrum, the electron exists on the boundary of both 600 cells simultaneously.
Simultaneously. So it isn't orbiting outside the nucleus at all.
No. It is a structural component of the nucleus's internal mathematical boundary.
I am really trying to picture this. It's almost like a duplex house.
A duplex?
Yeah, imagine two families living in a duplex. The protons live in apartment A, the neutrons live in apartment B.
Right.
The strong force is the shared interior door connecting them. That's the D4 bridge.
Right.
And the electron isn't a bird flying around outside the house. The electron is the plumbing built right into the walls.
That's a great way to put it.
It's the infrastructure that touches both apartments at the same time, acting as the boundary between the living room inside and the street outside.
That is a much more accurate visualization than a solar system, frankly.
It really clicks for me.
And think about the implications of that for quantum chemistry.
Mm.
Physicists have known for a long time that the one's electron orbital, the lowest energy state, has a measurable probability of being found dead center inside the nucleus.
At a radius of zero, right?
Exactly. In the orbital moon model, that makes absolutely no sense. Why would a moon be inside the planet?
Yeah, it wouldn't.
But here, it is perfectly logical.
Yeah.
The electron is not tethered by an invisible tractor beam across empty space.
It physically penetrates the nucleus because it belongs to the same algebra.
Precisely. It is the boundary condition of the nucleus itself.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. We've been talking purely about structure and spatial dimensions, but if this model is real, It has to map onto the real world. Does this abstract math actually predict the periodic table of elements that you and I can look up in a chemistry textbook?
It predicts it with stunning precision. And it does so without any of those fudge factors we talked about earlier.
No way.
In nuclear physics, there is a concept known as magic numbers.
Oh, I've heard of these.
Yeah, there are specific numbers of protons or neutrons, mm-hmm. 2, 8, 20, 28, 50, 82, and 126.
And those numbers result in incredibly stable atomic nuclei.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But for nearly 80 years, standard models have required complex fitted parameters. They've had to manually adjust the math to force their models to align with these observed magic numbers.
Right, just tuning the dials until the equation spits out 82. But how does E8 arrive at those numbers?
It derives them purely from the adjacency matrix of the 600 cell.
Wait, an adjacency matrix, isn't that just a spreadsheet showing which vertices connect to which other vertices?
It is a connectivity map, yes. But for a shape as highly symmetric as the 600 cell, that map strictly limits how energy can distribute itself. The adjacency matrix of the 600 cell has exactly 9 distinct mathematical eigenvalues.
Just 9?
Yes. And when you calculate the cumulative state count at each closure, which is essentially when a specific harmonic level is completely filled,
yeah.
The geometry naturally produces the sequence 2, 8, 20, 28, 50, 82, and 126.
You're kidding?
0 fitted parameters, 0 dial tuning. It is an exact mathematical extraction.
That is incredible.
And phenomena like double magicity, such as lead 208, which is famously Sable.
Right.
That occurs simply because both the proton 600 cell and the neutron 600 cell happen to close a mathematical shell simultaneously.
It's just naturally filling up the 4D parking garage. When a level's completely full, the structure is perfectly stable. That is wild.
It gets even more profound when we look at iron 56. This is the ultimate test of the structure.
Why iron?
Well, in astrophysics, iron is the endpoint of stellar fusion. Stars fuse lighter elements to create heavier ones, releasing energy. But that process hard stops at iron.
Right, the star dies after that.
Furthermore, the most stable isotope, iron 56, is asymmetric. It has 26 protons and 30 neutrons.
Which seems to contradict what we said earlier.
Exactly.
If the D4 bridge wants equal numbers, that 2-to-1 ratio, why does the most stable element in the universe have 4 extra neutrons?
Because of the structural limits of the geometry.
Okay.
The 600 cell has exactly 30 positive eigenvalue modes. Think of these as 30 bonding modes that lower the total energy of the atom.
Got it. 30 modes.
The neutron 600 cell has no electric charge, so it fills all 30 modes perfectly. It reaches the absolute structural bottom of the resonant cavity.
Right. No charge means no repulsion.
Exactly. But protons carry a positive electric charge. As you pack more and more protons into their 600 cell, they begin to repel each other. This is the Coulomb repulsion penalty.
Ah, so the math says there are 30 slots, but the protons start fighting each other before they can fill them all.
The math calculates the fight exactly. The structural energy gained by adding a proton to the bond is about 8.8 mega electron volts. But the Coulomb penalty for adding the 27th proton is roughly 9.3 mega electron volts.
Oh!
It literally costs more energy to force that 27th proton into the geometry than the bond can give back. So the proton 600 cell is forced to stop at 26.
The asymmetry of iron 56 isn't a random quirk of nature. It is a hard structural limitation of the split E8 architecture.
Precisely.
Oh, I see it. It's a game of Tetris.
Tetris.
Yeah, iron 56 is the perfect game of Tetris. The neutrons perfectly clear all 30 lines.
Right.
But for the protons, because of that electric charge, the penalty blocks start falling too fast at level 26.
That's a fun way to look at it.
They are mathematically forced to leave those last 4 spaces empty, or the whole structure breaks.
The math perfectly mirrors that limitation. And this leads to perhaps the most mind-bending conclusion of the paper regarding mass defect.
Mass defect.
Yes. When lighter elements fuse together up to iron, the resulting nucleus actually weighs less than the sum of the original parts.
Because the missing mass is converted into light. That is literally what makes the sun shine.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, Einstein's E equals mc squared is simply the invisible structural energy of the fourth dimension.
Wait, what?
When a free proton and a free neutron vibrate independently, they have a certain energy. When they enter the shared geometric cavity, they achieve a lower energy configuration.
And the difference in that geometric tension is radiated away as light.
Yeah.
So mass isn't a physical thing you can weigh on a scale. Mass is just trapped geometry.
Mass is the total energy of a four-dimensional standing wave. Mm. And the fraction of mass converted to light in the fusion chain from hydrogen up to iron is 0.937%.
Okay.
In standard models, physicists have to measure that in a lab and plug it into their equations. In the E8 framework, that exact percentage is a mathematical theorem.
It just naturally emerges.
The geometry dictates that it cannot be any other number. Standard models require 5 fitted terms to explain nuclear mass. The E8 split bonding formula requires 0.
0 fudge factors. The geometry just is the reality. Okay, we have covered an immense amount of ground here. Let me try to summarize the journey for everyone listening.
Please do.
We've taken the classic chaotic 3D model of an atom, you know, a bunch of particles orbiting an empty space.
Right.
And we've replaced it with a pristine 8-dimensional geometric resonant cavity, a space governed entirely by the Pentagon and icosahedral symmetry.
Perfectly stated.
We've seen how forces aren't invisible tethers, but mathematical bridges and boundaries within this shape. And particles themselves are just standing waves vibrating on this structure.
Which naturally brings up the skepticism any scientist should have.
Right. How do we know this isn't just beautiful, elegant philosophy? Is it actually testable?
It is. The author, Eric McLean, provides 6 kill conditions.
Kill conditions?
Yes. These are falsifiable experimental predictions that, if proven wrong by actual measurements, immediately destroy the entire E8 model.
So he's laying it all on the line. What's an example of a kill condition?
Well, the math definitively states there are exactly 2 600 cells, one for protons, one for neutrons.
Okay.
Therefore, if particle accelerators ever discover a stable third type of baryon, a particle like a proton or a neutron, but fundamentally different, the E8 model is dead.
Wow.
Another condition involves those magic numbers we discussed. If physicists ever confirm a stable magic number for an element between 126 and 184, the model is dead because the adjacency matrix explicitly skips that entire range.
It's demanding that experimental physics prove the geometry wrong. I love that.
It is a bold stance.
You know, as we wrap up, I can't stop thinking about this idea of the 4D state space.
Yeah.
If mass is just the trapped invisible energy of a 4-dimensional standing wave and the destruction of that resonance, you know, the tearing of that 4D geometry is what we experience in our 3D world as a nuclear explosion.
Yeah.
It just makes you look at the room around you differently.
In what way?
Well, think about the empty space around you right now as you listen to this. How much invisible geometry is structurally surrounding us at this exact moment?
A staggering amount, if this theory holds.
Right. Are we really just 3D shadow puppets walking around our flat 3D live, completely unaware of the massive 8-dimensional symphony playing all around us and building the very atoms of our bodies?
It is a humbling perspective. It suggests that the reality we perceive is just a tiny sliver of the architecture that actually holds us together.
It really is. Well, thank you to everyone for joining us on this deep dive. Go look around your 3D world today and see if you can spot the geometry hiding in plain sight.